Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance when we're able. We'll routine to call a scene to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are more mid-able. The many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're off to mad in Camelot. We sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Ma'am, sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh. Come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway! Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about! Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Hee hee! Hee! King Shaziz the Turtle! All rise for King Shaziz the Turtle and the Knights of the Round Table!
Away, 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 away
it's the end of time. And the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. My woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. But we grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace and we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. Grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. And we can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Constant sorrow all through his days. I am a man of constant sorrow. I've seen trouble all my days. I bid farewell to old Kentucky, the place where I was born and raised, the place where he was born and raised. For 6 long years I've been in trouble, no pleasure here on earth I found. For in this world have no friends to help me now. He has no friends to help him now. It's fairly well, my whole new lover. I never expect to see you again. For I'm bound to ride that northern railroad. Perhaps I'll die upon this train. Perhaps he'll die upon this train. Sleeping in my grave,
while he is sleeping in his grave.
Maybe your friends think I'm just a stranger. My face you never will see no more. But there is one promise that is given. I'll meet you on God's golden shore.
He'll meet you on God's golden shore.
Something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street, singing songs and carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop now, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop, children, what's that sound?
The table. All rise for the king to fill the table and the knights of the round table.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table. Got a pretty interesting subject going on here. probably take on a life of its own, just like all the other Knights of the Round Table. But I posted a little clip that I took off of BP Earthwatch. He does some research on CERN, the Hadron Collider, and the solar activity on the Sun. And I just copied a little piece of what he had on there. He said CERN was running at 13 tera-electron volts. The Sun is now erupting with multiple solar filaments releases. And I typed in, are those people insane? I don't know exactly how much a tera-electron volt is. Does anyone of you guys know?
Lord, no.
It sounds like a lot to me. If I just go over to Shaziz Radio Super Chat Room and scroll down, Stephen Gibbons put in some information on there about how many... Let me see if I can get down there where he had that portion of it. He said the total power consumption of the LHC and experiments is equivalent to 600 gigawatts per year, with a maximum of 650 gigawatts per hour. That's a lot, man. He said was running at 4 tera-electron volts for run 2, the estimated power consumption 750 gigawatts per year. The total CERN energy consumption is 1.3 terawatt hours per year, while the total electrical energy produced in the world is around 20,000 terawatt hours. In the European Union, 3,400 terawatt hours. In France, around 500 terawatt hours. And Geneva, Canton, 3 terawatt hours. Anyway, I'm not very good at reading that kind of stuff off there. Getting old. Either way, it sounds like a lot, man.
What to define milo, kilo, mega, giga, tera, peta is what we would call in the tera range is like the motion of a mosquito flying that frequency.
Okay, I understand that.
Is that all we're going there? Hold on, I'm trying to talk to somebody else. Keep going.
I like to say the confusion between amperage and voltage is more or less capacitance and frequency.
Okay.
Because if you have a jug of water, that is amperage. That's the capacitance. And if you start poking it with your finger and start poking it more and tapping it more and tapping it more, what do you have? You have a frequency of, let's just say, what capacitance? How much amperage does that have in it?
Okay.
It's no different than if I have a cup and I take a string and tie a string to it and you have a cup and I start tapping it.
Well, I think the key about what it is that you're talking about, and Stephen Gibbons asking her about... also, what would CERN have to do with the Sun, the interaction there? My whole deal is, you know, if you like take some magnet paper and you put it over the top of any magnet, you'll see the flux lines of that magnet. And so, essentially, the Earth is a thermoelectric generator of epic proportions, as according to what we've been taught, it has a hot molten metal core inside there that's spinning around, which creates a magnetic field that we call our magnetosphere. And so essentially what you're doing is putting a really powerful electromagnet on top of something that's already has to deal with magnetism. And so all you would have to do when you fire that... when you fire that thing up, that magnetic field, two magnetic fields are going to interact with each other. And so there has to be, even if only on a small scale, there has to be some sort of interaction between the two. And since the Sun and our Earth's magnetic field interact with each other from, you know, things like whenever the Sun has an eruption and that plasma hits our magnetosphere and stretches it out into space a bit, and then it snaps back and causes, you know, essentially seismic activity on the Earth. So my question would be that if you're growing at 13 tera electron volts, how big is the magnetic field around that puppy?
Hey, there you go.
You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I see what you're saying, and I'm trying to get a hold of it.
Well, the whole concept of CERN is literally to slam particles into each other, protons into each other, and basically see what comes out. You know, it's kind of like Yahoo Sirius out in his dad's shed splitting the beer at them, you know. That one beer at them had enough to blow the whole shed apart, you know.
I got that one.
And when we talk about, you know, that kind of power, you know, atomic energy, that's how the nuclear bomb, you know, atomic bomb all came about, you know, basically doing pretty much the same thing, splitting the atom. So my question is, you know, with what they're doing there, it's like to boldly go where no man has gone before. They don't know what they're going to see on the other side or what kind of reaction, and they've had all kinds of anomalies throughout the entirety of them doing these experiments. Mostly, you know, weird things that happen that shut down the electrical portions of it. You know, that thing has to be kept cool, and there's a lot of factors that play into that deal. But, you know, what are they looking for? They talked about the Higgs boson, the God particle. I mean, what are you going to do with it when you find it?
the definition of, or terminology of, the Higgs boson is the same as plasma, just a higher range.
Well,
no different than gigahertz or ultra low or ultra high, or it's just all on one part of the spectrum, like the thermometer. It's on that side of the decimal scale. You know, you two guys are unbelievable. You both are talking about the same thing. He's just using different words.
I'm just trying to define frequencies,
well,
wavelengths, or energy classes, what exactly they are.
He can be my translator to the high-tech terminology crowd, because I give the high-tech terminology crowd a headache, and they give me a headache, so...
Hey, that's what I'm trying to say.
So,
he
helps me out.
You're both on the exact same page. You're just talking a different language. That's all.
Did Barry make it in here?
No, I don't think so. I wish he did, though.
I added him to the call.
Okay. But, Justin, you've got so much knowledge, and I've told you this before, and you don't think you so, but I'm telling you, I know so. You are extremely brilliant, and the thing is, you keep talking to Shaziz and using words that he doesn't understand. Justin, you're the one that's really smart. You need to start talking, you know, language that people can understand.
Yes.
Okay?
So,
I'm trying to, like, what we're talking about Higgs boson stuff is, let's say we have radio waves, infrared, ultraviolet, X-rays, and gamma rays.
Yes.
They're just measured on a scale that we defined, like the thermometer. We placed the integer scale and the whole number scale on that column.
Right.
Gamma rays would start at 0.0001 nanometers. And then when you get into X-rays, you're at like 10 nanometers. Ultraviolet, infrared, 1,000 nanometers. And then you get up in the centimeters.
Right. Now, what
visible light would be basically the decimal value.
Okay, all right. Well, you just said a secret word there. Visible light. And Shaziz has said, hey, there's light that's not, we can't see. But yet, it is energy. Okay?
Yes.
What we need to do is build a solar panel that can collect that invisible energy. That's what Knights of the Round Table and Mad Science is all about. It's all about free energy. I mean, all energy is free. It's the machine, the object that you need to build, that costs money to build, to collect that free energy and convert turn it into something that's usable.
Nothing costs money if the Knight's Table is what it is, because we're all obtaining true knowledge. And let's face it, a Harley Davidson doesn't come from Jupiter, it comes from beneath our feet. You just have to obtain the true knowledge to make it what it really is. That's and take pride in what you do.
That's exactly what I've been trying to say to you. Start talking in a language that people can understand.
Alright, well, either way, it still poses the same question. You got that kind of power going on.
Right.
Those two fields between the Earth interacting, and we know that the Earth's magnetic field interacts with other bodies out in space, such as the Moon and the Sun. So, could this potentially be causing some problems down here on the Earth? That's the question, you know? I mean, if you're shaking up the Earth, if you take two magnets and you put one that by each other, you'll see that they'll either try to attract each other, or, you know, if they're far enough apart, you can still feel the interaction while they're moving past each other. So you got this big giant ring that they call the Hadron Collider setting on the face of the Earth, and it's creating a massive electromagnetic field because of the high voltage that's going through there. You know, I mean, 13 tera electron volts. That's quite a bit.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd probably smoke your toaster.
I believe that, though.
So, Stephen Gibbons typed in some information down in there. Somebody want to read that out there?
Yeah.
He put in energy electron volt. Somebody got to do the math for that. That's not my strong point.
Pretty simple.
Yeah, well, let's simplify it. How many volts is that?
You know.
Are you gonna read that out?
I can't find it.
EV electron volt 1.602176565 bracketed 3×10^19 joules times tera 1 billion for those who like math.
So, for those folks who aren't like super math whizzes, what would that be the equivalence of as far as voltage wise?
1 billion. That's 1 trillion, I believe.
1 billion or
one? 1, 3, 6, 9, 12. So, 1^12.
1 billion or 1 trillion volts is a lot of electricity, man.
Yeah.
Now, see, aren't these,
But that's, like you're saying, it's a lot of electricity, but it's just an oscillation or a vibration, modulation, or there's so many different words to say oscillation.
Yeah, but either way, that's, now you're playing with power. Okay, so now I know that at any voltage, at any oscillation, at any frequency, you're going to get a magnetic field disruption of some sort. And so when you got that much energy going on, I mean, you understand what I'm trying to ask here?
Yeah, I think I do. Can I inject something here?
Yeah.
All right. Voltage is not electricity. Voltage is pressure of the electricity. Now, in voltage, you have a lot of pressure. Now, it's like taking a fire ant hill, okay? Each little teeny tiny ant does hardly anything. In fact, if one was crawling over your skin, the only way you would know it is because of the movement. And your sensation of your body would feel that movement. But if it did not move, you wouldn't even know it was there. However, the entire anthill of 15, 20, 40,000 ants. I mean, come on. Some of these anthills get a lot bigger than that. Can strip an elephant. Hey.
Especially those ants over there in Africa, man. What do they call them doggone giant ants? Big old suckers, man. They carry you away.
Tiny ants can strip an elephant to the bone in 48 hours. I mean, pressure is how much okay? Amperage is how much you have. Pressure is push. And what I've been trying to understand the usage of this, you keep talking about you want to find out how to use voltage to actually do work. And this it's boggling my mind, because you're right. If you have a lot of voltage, but yet you have a little tiny bit of amperage, but you got all this force and all this pressure.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Well, to me, it's absolutely amazing. How do we do this? How do we take this anthill and move it where we need it to strip this elephant down to the bone? This is work.
When they first learned about how to create the atomic bomb, you know, of course they had to go around and test it. They blew off a lot of them around the planet, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a lot of power. You get a massive electromagnetic pulse every time you do that. I mean, they're actually talking about that could be one of the things. You blast one up in the upper atmosphere, and it creates an electromagnetic pulse that shuts down everybody's equipment in the general vicinity in quite some ways out, too. But I'm still boggled about this amount of energy being produced and thinking about how they have to have huge cooling systems in order to be able to keep this thing cool, you know, because with that kind of high voltage and pressure, you're going to create friction, which in turn is going to create heat, and so if you don't disperse that heat, the thing will pretty much eat itself alive. Is there in your mind a danger there of an unintentional explosion and or implosion or something like that? You see what I'm saying?
I see exactly what you're saying. And you are 117.5% correct.
Well,
I mean, what are you going to do with this heat?
Yeah, like I remember they was talking about these supercomputers, how much water they actually use to cool down some of these supercomputers, and those aren't nowhere near running at that kind of voltage.
Got it.
You know, when they got that thing tapped into a river or a lake or whatever. Either way, now you're playing with power. So you create this massive magnetic field that interacts with the Earth's molten magnetic core. All you got to do is wobble that core just a little bit, and you're going to get a reaction somewhere on the Earth. You know, essentially, basically like throwing a rock in the pond or whatever. Yeah, that sends that ripple out. And so, to me, if you're tampering around with that kind of energy and you're creating a magnetic field that you're turning off and turning on, testing, trying to spin these particles towards each other, that you could literally create an earthquake on some portion of the globe, or maybe even potentially all over the doggone globe every time you fired that puppy up and shut it down, because that field raising up and then collapsing would interact with the magnetic field of the Earth itself. You see what I'm saying?
That I do understand.
Yeah. So I'm just asking, are these guys nuts or what? You know, I mean, you're slamming particles into each other. You don't know exactly what you're going to get. I mean, what about tearing a hole in the fabric of the universe? You know, is that even remotely possible? Or, you know, there's just a whole lot of unknowns to this this potential energy that they're talking about doing. But either way, it all goes back to another question that I got. You know, if we got this problem with the Earth's magnetic field that is weakening or something like that, the last thing I think you'd want to be doing is tampering with the magnetic field. And if we have this problem with the whole global warming, like I say, once again, since the Earth's magnetic field is our shield from radiation from the sun, you wouldn't necessarily want to be tampering with that field as well. You see where I'm coming from?
Yes, but can we look at this? A piece of aluminum or copper, if we take a magnet and we
we take the sheet of copper or aluminum and we put it up in the air, that magnet will slowly slide down it. Okay? It has an atmosphere around it. If we're taking all the elements out of the earth and now they're being corroded on a large scale, we're losing our atmosphere.
Okay, I understand that.
Well, we got a bunch of madmen running the ship, man.
Yep, dude.
Hell, I'm into some mad science, but I also kind of want to try to be, polite to nature, because you get nature on your bad side, well, then you got problems. And it's blatantly obvious by all the things going on out there in this world that nature's not too happy with everybody. So, you know, while I am not a believer in global warming by any stretch of the imagination, science is science. A magnetic field will interact with another magnetic field. Now, does CERN create strong enough magnetic field to even make a difference? I don't know that. That's why I'm posing this question for all the other brilliant minds out there to say yay or nay, you know? Is it possible that CERN creates a strong enough magnetic field to interact with our magnetic field to cause waves in the molten core of the Earth and cause earthquakes on the other side? And then if the Earth's magnetic field is fluctuating, interacting with the magnetic field of the Sun, would it cause this activity on the Sun? You know, because we already know that the Sun's activity can affect our seismic activity here on the Earth. I mean, we get radiant energy, we get plasma, we get all kinds of energy from the Sun. And so when the Sun throws a fit, we feel it down here on the Earth, you know, one way or another. It's either getting really hot or it's shaking things up. You see where I'm coming from?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
So I think it's a valid question to pose, you know, whether or not CERN running at 13 tera electron volts, which is more than my house wire can hold up to, you know. I like to try that on a Tesla coil and see what I get. You know what I mean?
The thing is, man seems to think he is so great, and we build all these nuclear bombs and TNT bombs and dynamite, and we move all these hundreds of thousands of tons of earth all over the place. And man seems to think that, one of these days we're going to tilt the world.
Well,
Mount St. Helens released more energy, 300 times more energy than all of the weapons throughout the entire World War II that man created. But it did it in one instant and didn't shake up the world. Oh, it shook up a lot of people, but it didn't do a daggone thing to the world.
Well, when you're talking about magnetic fields, it's a whole different beast there, because you're not talking about like a pressure wave or an acoustic wave as like dropping a firecracker outside, or even a stick of dynamite for that matter. It's only going to travel so far through the atmosphere. You know, you're not going to hear a stick of dynamite from the United States clear on the other side of the world.
Are you sure about that?
Well, I suppose you could with, you know, some sensitive equipment or something like that, but the, as far as acoustic wave goes, it's...
Who was it that said, when a moth flies from a peach tree to a cherry tree in Hong Kong, that the waves of the wings in the air affects the weather in Cincinnati, Ohio?
Well, I understand, and I don't disagree with that in any sense, but you know, even that strengthens my case there. If the butterfly effect is a reality, then messing around with something that is at that range is definitely a reality. I mean, that's a lot of power, man.
Yes, it is. You know,
hook that up to some bass cannons and put some of that doom, doom, doom music that the kids drive down the road banging to, you know.
Right.
Everybody on the planet's ears will be bleeding. Hook your guitar up to that puppy, man.
Really? You know, oh, man. I don't know if this is what it's talking about, but I've said it before. I took some speakers and I put my multimeter on, and I live in the landing flight path of DFW, which is Dallas-Fort Worth Airport. And all I did was walk outside, and as the planes would come over, I would aim the speaker at those airplanes, and the sound would actually make electricity.
Yeah, you can do that.
Yeah. You know, everything around is energy. I mean, it's movement. It's you're talking about the magnetic forces pulling on the magma of the Earth, and magma is supposedly a liquid. I mean, and yet it has magnetic properties.
Yeah, and if it is molten metal, like they say, you know, we got a molten metal core, and all this is molten material in there. Even the viscosity of it, the thickness of it, you know, not necessarily like, you know, the difference between water and oil, right?
Right.
Well, as long as it's molten, you can send a wave through that, you know? You can send a wave through, you know, a solid object as well with the right frequency, but I'm saying as far as like throwing a rock in a pond, you know, you can send a wave through that, and that ripple creates pressure somewhere inside that that egg shape or that container.
And right.
So, could that be a potential cause of you know, the straw that broke the camel's back that caused the earthquake on one side, or maybe even a volcano to erupt?
Okay, now you talk.
So that's all I'm asking. You know, that kind of pressure. That's a lot of pressure. You know,
yes.
And you're sending that energy around in a circle, you're creating motion, which in turn is going to create some sort of disruption in the magnetic field of the Earth. Even if it's only a slight disruption, is that slight disruption enough to, you know, escalate as it travels across the deal, kind of like a tsunami wave? It doesn't start off fast right out of the gate. I mean, it builds up power as it's pushing all that energy forward. You see what I mean?
My answer would be no, and that would be also a complete no with what's going on with the sun and the earth.
So, are you going to explain it or what?
Okay, so we know that the sun is emitting electrons, per se, to the earth, because the earth holds a capacitance value. Every now and then, when there's too much emission, the earth burps and exchanges those electrons, per se, back to the sun or to Venus or Mars or wherever, right? We're all in one container. What surrounds us is the Milky Way, a glacier of ice, basically. And CERN, the frequency of the Higgs boson or Higgs field is the frequency of mosquitoes. So every single mosquito in the world right now flying is not affecting anything. No, I would say it's not affecting nothing.
Oh, I don't know if I agree with that kind of concept, because it doesn't matter how small something is.
That's why I said every single mosquito in the earth flying right now is
two objects can't occupy the same place at the same time, and for every action is an equal and opposite reaction. So if two mosquitoes bump into each other, they create an opposite force going in the opposite direction from each other. So that is, even on the smallest of scale, is still a disruption in everything that's going on.
Okay, wait a minute. Holy cow.
Yes, it hurts your brain, don't it?
Yes, it does, because the thing is, two mosquitoes will never bump into each other.
Well, probably not, but if they did, if like one of them was looking at a hot mosquito on the right and the other one was looking at a hot mosquito on the left, and they just flying along and say, hey, you know, and then slammed into each other face first.
Right.
According to the laws of physics, who was it, Newton? For every action, equal opposite reaction?
Yeah, Isaac Newton.
Alright, so if you're putting 1,300 tera electron volts out here into this medium that we are floating around in, what is the opposite reaction? That's the question.
Right, okay. Now, Isaac Newton, I believe, I'm not sure, I think he's the one that came up with the question. What happens when an immovable object comes in contact with an irresistible force. And the answer, as far as I can tell, is obvious. They pass through one another.
Yeah, could they cancel each other out, or would they pass right through? You know, that's, yeah.
But it would pass right through. It could not cancel each other out because they are two solid objects. An irresistible force coming in contact with an immovable object. There is only one solution. They must pass through each other or die. And if they die, then they no longer exist. And if they no longer exist, then there is no such thing as humanity. There is no such thing as Earth. And the sun does not exist. Because this is a totally mental situation.
Yeah, it's because driving me mental.
The thing is, if an invisible force comes in contact with an immovable object, there is only one solution. The irresistible force must pass through the immovable object. Think about it.
So, if somebody on the opposite dimension from us, you know, the mirror effect, whatever you see on one side, on the opposite side, which side's the real world, you know, this side of the mirror or that side of the mirror. So somebody on the opposite side of the world just got 13 tera-electron volts across their hair.
All right, good deal.
So, how's that for a bad hair day?
I love it.
I'm just putting the questions out there on the table because it's plausible. I mean, if there's something going on in there, what happens if they slam these particles together and even on a microscopic scale?
Well, if you want a true answer, just build a small scale.
Build a collider and run it around my mad science lab?
If you want the true answer, right? We're always like, oh, the Earth's flat, this and that. Well, if we want true answers, then we can just do it.
Yeah, well, I don't know if the Earth's flat, concave, convex,
right?
Round, or whatever, because reality, I guess, according to everybody else, is everybody's own single perception or whatever. But, you know, if I do build a miniature collider, which I think they actually sell, I saw a deal on there that they make small colliders that you can actually purchase. If I did make one, and you see a mushroom cloud up over the top of my house, you know it went awry.
Oh, Lord. Hey, thank you for the collider. I just want to see you light up some daggone fluorescent light bulbs.
Yeah, Stephen puts in the chat room, he says, now if they put a projectile into CERN, you would have one heck of a magnetic rail gun. Well, ain't no kidding. That's like they say it was going like almost the speed of light or something like that.
Yeah.
Now, there's where you go through your immovable object. Anyway, it's a fascinating question. And, you know, we got a lot of things going on out here in this world. Some of the things that these people with lots of money do, I think that too much money gives you too much time on your hands, and they're trying to do all these kind of stuff. You know, what would happen if the atomic bomb never showed up on the scene? You know, there's a lot of good things that come out of atomic energy, but just on the same opposite spectrum, whatever, there's a lot of bad things that come up out of there, such as radioactive waste that they don't know what to do with and such.
Right.
So what is going to be the future of CERN, Hadron Collider? I guess we'll find out one way or another. They'll either blow us into an alternate dimension or create a black hole and suck us inside out.
You know, you said yesterday on Mad Science about all the trash, the spent nuclear fuel for nuclear reactors making electricity, and all the spent fuel, and they're storing it here, storing it there. And I keep saying over and over again, because I'm a true believer, one man's trash is another man's treasure.
Well, yeah, you got to think about it. You know, when those things get down too weak to where they can't boil the water, you know, it's not that they're not still hot. They are. That's why they call them radioactive, and they put that in storage, and basically it's got, you know, a long half-life on it, which we talked about yesterday, I think, as well. But either way, it's still, as it's decaying, releasing energy. And that energy, it doesn't matter where the energy comes from, whether it be an acoustic wave, a sound wave, a light wave, or whatever, all that energy can be stored and used. And so, yeah. I don't understand why, you know, like they could send the probe supposedly all the way to Pluto with a reactor in it that is a thermoelectric generator that's producing 200 watts. 200 watts isn't nothing to scoff about whenever you're that far away from Earth. Yeah. You know, that's still a lot of power as far as a thermoelectric generator. And they're using what they said was thermocouples to do it. And so they've got it figured out pretty well to know that you can take so many thermocouples, and with this particular type of heat, you can get enough energy to run your equipment on there and then literally send a signal all the way back here, whereas the sun is sending the energy out, and it's not... By the time it gets to Pluto, it's not high enough, the energy is not high enough to use a solar panel efficiently. You can't get that much energy out of it. You see what I'm saying? Where'd everybody go? Did I lose you guys?
I'm here.
But they got that thermoelectric generator going on out there, and so why not use that same technology to, you know, use up some of that energy coming off of that with radioactive waste.
Right. One man's trash is another man's treasure. But, hey, that man that deemed it as trash tried to get rid of it. So, who's going to complain if you go to his trash can and pull it out?
Well, when it comes to that particular trash right there, they won't let you anywhere near it. I mean, there was a guy that did the video called Nuclear Scare Scam. Do you remember what that guy's name was?
No, I don't.
Anyway, Galen Windsor. He offered to take the radioactive trash because he knew that there was energy potential in it. He said, hey, I'll get rid of it for you. They wouldn't give it to him. They wouldn't have no part of it. They wanted to bury it and seal it up in concrete so nobody could get a hold of it.
Right.
But there's that radioactive waste all over this planet, man. You know, and if they got, like right now, they got a big old mess going on over at Fukushima, according to what the alternative media is talking about, because the mainstream sure ain't talking about it. So there's tons of energy right there in itself. And here's what cracks me up. People always argue about how there ain't no such thing as free electricity. Well, if there ain't no such thing as free electricity, but yet you could have a half-life of a radioactive rod being 25,000 years or more. 25,000 years of free energy, to me, is still free electricity. I'm not going to live 25,000 years, so if I don't have to pay for it while I'm alive, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but the thing is, we're talking about... All right, no, we're not. We're not talking about... We are going in the realm of what I keep saying about the cold steam turbine. The cold steam turbine boils water at 55 degrees.
Okay, and so the regular steam turbines out there, they rely on a whole lot different temperatures. You have 650 PSI or 1200 PSI boiler back in the middle 80s. You know, it takes a lot of heat to get that much steam pressure built up.
Yes, it does, but if you boil water at 55 degrees, the steam from the water has no power other than the fact that it's turning to steam. Water does not turn to steam slowly. It can explode one molecule of water when it gets to the point of exploding in the steam, it explodes. It is an explosion that is power, and it had in itself had no power other than to push everything out of its way, which is water that has not turned to steam, which causes an agitation in that water. Now, if you put something on the water, and that agitation is going to move that object, if that object just happens to be a magnet, and it just happens to be a coil above it, then you're going to get electricity. You're going to extract power where there is no power. I didn't use the words, I'm sorry.
There's definitely expansion going on there. Anytime you heat, heat expands and cold contracts, so...
Exactly.
Either way, it's very interesting. I mean, we talk about trying to make the world a better place, and one of the things that everybody's been fighting over all this time is energy, you know, whether it be oil or whatever resources, when all around us there is so much energy that it's just mind-boggling.
Yes, it is. It's totally, totally mind-boggling how much energy is here and we're not using it.
Yeah, and I fully believe that we could use it perfectly in perfect harmony with nature. You know, Gerard Morin, he did a video here recently that I liked on YouTube there. Essentially, he was showing with different sound waves. He actually got an electric motor that wasn't plugged in to literally turn, not to the full rotation that you'd see, you know, an electric motor going, but you could actually see movement in that while he was hitting it with sound waves.
You're right.
And so that pretty much says what I've been saying all along. Energy travels in waves, you know? And if you could design a motor that you would use sound waves as opposed to the normal current that you'd be putting inside there, I mean, it'd be like a pulse motor. You sound wave from this side gets that going that direction, and sound wave from the other side gets it going the opposite direction, vice versa. You see where I'm coming from?
I can't take it no more. Everything we're talking about is expansions and collapsations.
Yeah, right. Well, that's what we said.
There is no black without white.
It's just a matter of how much of a volume, a capacitance we have and make it. Like I said, that 1 volt of an oscillation modulation on that capacitor, like your 9 volts with all your capacitors and your lights and everything, it's just an oscillation that you're sending. The capacitance holds the amperage value, per se.
What do you say, something collapsing?
Any kind of an expansion and a collapsation.
Expansion and collapse.
Well, you say expansion and collapsation, where I say something simple like disruption. You disrupt the normal of the medium,
disruption.
And that simply there you got your frequency is determined by how often you do it, you know?
That's English for us, because we've taken so many different languages and so many different words, and we've made them all the same, so our terminology is lost.
Well,
both of all understand the same thing, but we've understand it and we've worded it under our words.
Right, both of you saying.
And there's so many words to pick and choose from. That's why everything I write, I throw in every word for oscillation.
You're both saying exactly the same thing, but in two different languages.
But either way,
but on the same page.
Back to the whole, for every action is an equal and opposite reaction. When you bump this one that way, the other one's going to go in the opposite direction.
Exactly.
Two objects can't occupy the same place and time. And so with that said, everything that we do on this earth, doesn't matter how small or how insignificant it is, affects the entire of the earth. I mean, it's the whole little butterfly, you know, flapping its wings thing. You know, so my question is, with all this technology such as the CERN and the Hadron Collider, I mean, it can't go without something occurring. I mean, is it perfectly safe? I mean, is it like, you know, whatever?
Again, expansions and collapsations. We're worried about CERN when it's running, okay? We're worried about a nuclear bomb, right? That's an expansion on the natural medium. CERN, okay, a small scale, 2.5 meters by 50 centimeters, tube, vacuumed out, has 1,112 cubic meters of pressure put inside of it, pulling on the natural medium.
So what happens, when the glass cracks on that vacuum?
It's collapsed, okay? CERN is so big, there's such a big vacuum on that. If there's a hole, what's going to happen? Equilibrium of the natural medium in that hole. Just like the same thing with an airplane, when you're up so high and you punch a hole in that airplane, what's going to happen?
Well, and same thing applies with what is going on with the energy from the sun. When our magnetosphere, when that plasma hits our magnetosphere, it literally stretches it out into space. It's not going out in the space portion that's the bad. It's that the rubber band effect is that snaps back into place and shakes the crud out of the core of the Earth, which in turn creates seismic activity all over the globe. So it's the same exact concept of what you're talking about. When you push all that energy out and it has to come back in, what's going to hurt more? The going out or the coming back in? Either way, it doesn't look good in my book. So
just it being vacuumed is dangerous enough.
Yeah. So what are the byproducts of it? You know, that's what needs to be figured out. I mean, these guys, they're not asking anybody else out on the planet for permission to do this, you know. They're just doing it. Hey, let's slam this together and see what happens at almost the speed of light.
Now you're talking real true sense. It's function, caution, okay?
Yeah.
They want to do this, they want to do that, and they don't know what's going to happen, but they're going to try it anyway. I mean, who the hell cares? Excuse my French.
In an instant, you could literally, who knows, create a massive explosion or a massive implosion or open up a gateway, whatever. Who knows what their ultimate goal out of the deal is.
The name I think you're talking about is Pandora's Box.
Yeah, open Pandora's Box, and what do you get?
I mean, once it's open, you've released the genie out of the bottle. Now, the genie could be a good one or a bad one. I mean, you know, come on.
Well, I know that to make advancements in society, people have taken chances. I mean, the first guy that lit off a firecracker or a stick of dynamite, you know, basically kind of pushed the limits to see how far he could push the limits. Well, if that was that powerful, what happens if we do this, you know? And he blew his arms and legs off, and so that was what happens if you do that.
Right.
The same thing with the atomic bomb, you know? I mean, we've heard nightmares about how many years it'd be before you could ever actually go back into a place because everything would be irradiated. Well,
wait a minute. I need to inject something here. All right. Supposedly, I mean, you said 25,000 years, blah, blah, blah. But supposedly, from what I've read and studied, half-life is like, you know, 1,000 or 2,000 years or 5,000, and you keep saying 25,000, and that's a half-life. I mean, but the thing is, Hong Kong, Hiroshima, and Nagasaki, Hiroshima and Nagasaki were bombed with nuclear weapons.
Yeah, and I stood there in 1984, right there at Ground Zero. I went to both museums, one in Hiroshima and the one in Nagasaki, and I seen destruction that it created. I mean, you literally were standing there looking at a wall that they had saved, the section of the wall that a person was literally burnt to the wall. I mean, it was not like, it just looked like a black silhouette on the wall.
Right.
That's how much intense heat. But the fact that I was actually staying there kind of says something about the whole, it's going to be irradiated for 1,000 years. Nobody knows whether it be 100 to 1,000 or even longer. When I talk about the half-life of radioactive material, I'm talking about the material itself. I'm not talking about the actual explosion.
Okay, wait a minute. Now, you said 1987. 84. 84, okay. 84, and the bomb was dropped
30 years ago.
44, correct?
I can't remember what year it was.
30 years ago.
But
84 would be 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. able, I'm not talking about how many years ago, I'm talking about from the time the bomb was dropped until you were standing there and you didn't get cooked.
Yeah, it wasn't that long. And there's thousands of people living there. And, you know, there was actually, I actually even talked to some people that were alive during the time that the bomb went off. They were far enough away from it that they got a little bit of the flash burns kind of stuff like that, but they were still alive.
Right.
So that's where the whole nuclear scare scam video comes in. It poses the tough questions.
Right.
Galen Windsor asked, you know, and he said, we used to mix this stuff with by hand. So if that's the case, if he's right, and he's still alive, and they used to mix this stuff by hand, then that means the energy association, the energy industry right out there has been lying to everybody and his brother for all these years, because if it's safe enough for him to... And he even eats some of it in the video to show him, look, this stuff's radioactive, I just ate it, right?
Right.
And the dude's still alive. So either that's one heck of a hoax, or he's right and the energy industry has been lying all these years, which means that all the wars that were fought after all this started were for nothing. If we're out there fighting over oil and resources, then it was a waste of time, right? Because
right.
We had free energy all along.
Right.
So, if you pose that question to the wrong crowd, you're going to get tore up, man. They'll curse you up and down the storm. Oh, it's plutonium, stupid. Really? They sent plutonium to Pluto, according to the deal. They made a little thermal electric generator that went all the way... 9 years it took for this craft to reach Pluto. 9 years. So those batteries, that little generator, worked for 9 years and didn't go bad in the vastness of the hostile, cold, deep, dark space. And 9 years later, it was able to run the equipment to take the pictures, do the measurements, and send the data back to the Earth, according to what NASA has claimed. So if NASA has this capability, and we know we're sitting around on tons and tons and tons of radioactive waste, then why aren't we using those tons and tons and tons of radioactive waste to create thermal electricity instead of boiling water? If you boil water, we already know the power of hydrogen and oxygen. You separate the two, you get a little bit of ignition going on, and you got a problem. You get a hydrogen explosion. That's why they tell you never to throw water on an electrical fire.
Right.
So, on one hand, they're saying that they were able to do this, but on the other hand, they're saying we got an energy crisis, we got to reduce our carbon footprint.
Yeah.
How much of a carbon footprint did 13 tera electron volts create? That's not just a footprint, that's the whole boot upside your booty.
Yeah.
And then some. I mean,
the thing is, there's so much free energy surrounding the Earth that, I mean, let's put this in a proper perspective.
We're floating in a sea of it, Raymond.
Yeah, right. The Earth is a little bitty rock floating around space, and the sun is so much larger, and it's radiating all this energy throughout the universe that we are not collecting. But the thing is, what the Earth does collect in one 24-hour period would generate more power than all of humanity needs for 100 years. In 24 hours.
Well, you know what? Has anybody ever? Has anybody ever been able to get out there and just like put their hands up and yell "stop" at a tornado and get that tornado to stop?
Well,
that's a lot of power.
No joke.
Stephen Gibbons said that the depleted uranium half-life is 4.5 BN, is that billion years? The spread of this around the world in recent wars is far more devastating radiation-wise than Hiroshima and Nagasaki combined. Well, I agree to some extent, but then again, it poses in the question what Galen Windsor was talking about. Is it really seriously that dangerous? Because look at here. They're talking about they took depleted uranium and made bullets out of it because it was like a really hard, heavy metal, right? Armor-piercing. Now, that means that soldiers are carrying around what would be the equivalence of still radioactive material, because if it's still, even though it says depleted uranium, doesn't mean that it's not no longer radioactive. It's just not as radioactive as what it was that they used it for the fuel rods and such. Okay. But it's still radioactive.
Okay.
So if you're a soldier and you got a couple magazines of these upside your chest or whatever, you know, okay, well, maybe it's not even the equivalence of an X-ray, but regardless, it's still radioactive. It isn't completely depleted. It's still releasing energy. And they're spitting this all the way around, shooting at people?
Well, you just said everything. It's still releasing energy.
Yeah.
That's the whole point. It's still releasing energy. The point that you have been trying to make, and I've been trying to make, is energy is everywhere.
Yeah.
It's everywhere. I mean, there is no such thing as energy that is not free. It's the machine that costs money to transform one type of energy into another type of energy.
Well, and that word transform that you just used, that's the key. That's the key right there, because there's all kinds of energy out there, and you can change you can't destroy it, you can't create it, but you can change the form, the frequency of that energy. That's how we get usable work out of it.
So if one man deems this energy as trash, and another man says, wait a minute, I can use that, then why is he being stopped?
Well, they got a little piece of americium, which is radioactive material, in every smoke detector. I believe they even got them in carbon monoxide detectors as well. Because even as tiny as that thing is, it's still releasing energy, and that energy goes up to a detector diode on the opposite side. And when anything comes in between there and changes the current that is produced by that little piece of americium going up there to the detector, then it tells the circuit that there's a problem. Smoke just passed in between this, changed the frequency that's actually hitting on that, and it told the smoke detector to fire off the siren that your house is potentially on fire.
Okay, wait a minute. You just said something that brought in play in my mind. People that are born blind but yet can walk through a room without bumping into furniture.
Yeah, they use the equivalence of basically how bats would fly around. The sonar, you know, the energy that surrounds you as the individual, there's a field around you. And if you pay attention to that, you can sense when somebody's within that circle.
I'm going back in our conversation on this radio show about invisible what?
Yeah.
There's light waves, energy that we cannot see, but a blind person, unknowing to themselves, feel this energy, and they know that, okay, so X-rays can do this, and gamma rays can do that, and it will change the actual wavelength when crystal glass, it disrupts its wavelength.
Yep.
That's what I'm trying to say, is blind people that were born blind can see.
Well, how do motion detectors work?
Okay, there you go. Now you're talking.
So that's essentially the simple of it. We're surrounded in energy, and every bit of energy can be detected, can be stored. It's all there is to it. You know, the capacitors that we talk about all the time, you know, you can store static energy in there. You can store DC current. You know, all you're doing is moving electrons from one place to the next.
And that's what Justin's been trying to say. He just doesn't use words you and I understand. Justin is saying, hey, capacitance. I mean, you're talking about energy moving it from here to there.
Yep. And if it can travel off the rubber of your shoe.
Capacitance.
Huh?
Directive capacitance.
Okay.
Well, in any energy, especially like the coils that we use for our electric motors right now, those copper wires, those windings, they ain't nothing more than railroad tracks. That's it.
Anything wound is incorrect.
Well, either way, that's how it functions right now. All it's doing is guiding the energy around. And because those windings are so tightly wound close together that the field that is created by the electron flow in the copper wire is interacting with the field on the next wire and so on and so forth. And so that creates a coupling that literally creates a stronger magnetic field all combined together, which turns the rotor in your electric motor.
You two guys are unbelievable. You're great. You're fantastic.
So, if you could take the energy off of depleted uranium or whatever and turn that into a positive, such as using it for, you know, energy generation, then you ain't got no waste out there.
That's a different type of energy, though. That's an electrodynamic.
Yeah, but everything
which is electrostatic.
Everything out there is different energy. It's all energy. It doesn't matter what frequency range it's in. It doesn't matter whether it's static energy or the conventional sense that we use as electricity. All of it is potential energy. And if it's releasing energy and can be detected, it can also be stored. That's what I'm saying.
Wait a minute. Justin said expansion and collapse.
Okay. What do you think's happening when that dang the radioactive material is depleting? It's releasing energy out from it.
Now, wait a minute. I'm not a brilliant person, okay? I'm not even smart. But I keep talking about cold steam turbine. And I'm going with what everything you said should have said, and everything Justin said. Okay.
Well, let me explain to you the simple of what you just said. Okay, you said cold steam, and you said at what, 55 degrees you can boil water?
Yes.
All right, the frequency like of a super hot radioactive rod would be so high that it would create friction inside that water that would cause the water to literally boil into steam and build up a massive amount of pressure quickly. At 55 degrees, even the depleted uranium would have enough energy to create the frequency to cause those water molecules to rock fast enough to warm them up to 55 degrees. So the only difference is I got a full 9-volt battery or I got a quarter full 9-volt battery. Both will do work, they just won't do it as fast.
Right. Now you're getting it. It's not as fast. Now, it takes 9 years for this satellite to go to Pluto.
Yeah.
During that length of time, this little bitty piece of plutonium, whatever, is building up all this energy, and it's going into capacitors, and it's storing that energy, so that then when all of a sudden now you've got all this energy stored up in your capacitor, now you can use it. I mean, the thing is about the cold steam turbine is that it produces a very little bit of power, but it uses waste energy. With the cold steam turbine, you can take the heat from the backside of your air conditioner, turn it into energy, and push it back into the air conditioner itself.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like the piggy bank thing that I kept talking about, how if you funnel energy in from all different directions, whether it be solar, wind, hydroelectric, thermoelectrics, or wind power, whatever, you funnel it in from all different directions and you're filling up that Olympic sized swimming pool. Could you imagine how much energy you could feel and how rapidly you could fill up an Olympic sized swimming pool with that much energy of all that radioactive waste? They say it's radioactive for a reason, because it's still releasing energy. If you could just visualize a piece of pencil lead, and every so often that piece of pencil lead spits off an atom of lead. Poof. All right? That's what depleted uranium is doing. It's still spitting off that piece. And as that's bitten off, that's energy being released.
You said this several months ago on this show, and I understood exactly what you're saying. And I'm just wondering, is there anybody else that understands what you're saying? Because I'm listening to you, and I want to hear you. So I'm listening to your words, and I don't give a damn. Excuse my French, I'm sorry. I don't care if you're speaking German, French, English, Spanish, whatever. I'm listening to you, and I'm wanting to hear what you're saying, because what you're saying is correct.
Well,
it's absolutely 100% correct. And Justin is 100% correct. The problem is, the two of you, for some reason, don't want to hear the other one.
I hear him. We're just bickering over terminology. That's the whole deal, because we're actually, and I've been saying this forever and a day, we're saying the same thing, we're just saying it differently.
Okay, that's what I've been saying. The two of you are absolutely, unbelievably brilliant. You just refuse to listen to the other one's language. But the thing is, you're saying exactly the same thing.
But I'm trying to keep it on the simple spectrum, because to understand how energy functions and to be able to be able to one day prove beyond a shadow of a doubt energy's free, you got to be able to talk to everybody, you know, and not just the brilliant individuals out there on the world. You got to be able to talk to people that aren't tech savvy or electrical savvy or whatever. But it's all basics. It all falls down to basic science. If you throw a rock in the pond, you send out waves. That's a frequency right there. All right. How often you throw that rock in the middle of that pond will determine how high that frequency is. So if you keep throwing one right after another, you're going to create enough energy to make a larger wave, and so on and so forth. You
exactly.
See what I'm saying?
Yes, sir. You and Justin are so dang smart, you don't even know how to talk to each other. Both of you, you're brilliant, but you don't know how to talk to each other. One of you has got to slow down and learn the other one's language. Or, hey, the perfect scenario would be if both of you slowed down and started talking to each other in a language that you could both understand, because both of you are talking about the same cotton picking thing.
Yeah,
same thing. But you're arguing.
Well, when I talk about free energy and I talk about all these different devices out, and my concerns with things like CERN out there, is that I don't want to put anything into circulation that's going to be harmful. You know, like some people are really susceptible to RF waves, you know, and some people are not.
Well,
I believe that has to do with the chemistry of the individual's body, such as the difference of, like maybe in your body, you got more iron than I got. Maybe I'm iron deficient, so it wouldn't necessarily bother me as much to be around radio waves that it would be you. You see what I'm talking about?
I see exactly what you're talking about. I see exactly, because you try to talk simple.
Yep. Well, that's the only way I know how to communicate what would be otherwise high tech in my head, you know. And I don't always have the terminology to say it the way that some college educated brilliant mind from Harvard or Yale or whatever fancy school name they got out there. So I just say it did the simplest way that I can. Now, using basic science, something that a kid should be able to understand, we are sitting literally in a sea of energy. We've got a lot of things going on in this world, such as wars over resources, that shouldn't be taking place. There shouldn't be no reason for anybody to not be able to have the luxury of electricity in their house. Yeah, it doesn't matter if they're in a third world country. Why can't we, as the more blessed nation, send them solar panels to set up so that they can have at least some lighting in the fan if their environment isn't, cool enough. And we got all kinds of pump technology, so why can't we send water in so that they can irrigate their crops, so that they can feed themselves? It just goes on forever. We put all this military-industrial machine together, we can literally go over and mop somebody into the Stone Age. I mean, destroy their infrastructures and cause all kinds of problems, refugee situations and food shortages and stuff. And of course, when that happens, it's the strongest man in that deal is going to get to eat. The rest of them are without. And why would we even want to put anybody into that position?
Exactly. It's not necessary.
Yeah. So all this energy that we've been talking about, and all the money that was spent on a project such as CERN, I'm always good for advancements. I just think that as you advance as a society, you proceed with caution, and you make sure that for every plan you got a backup plan. I mean, they didn't just throw the nuclear power plants up without some sort of research. They did put backup plans in them nuclear power plants. But did they take it? But did they take it far enough?
What president of the United States actually declared war? He declared war on poverty. Who
was? I thought Roosevelt did at one point.
I think it was Ford, wasn't it?
It may have been. It's hard to say, but they lost. They lost the war on poverty because there's still poverty in this world.
Okay, so the thing is, what you're saying is, if we truly declared war and we put all of our resources toward that war, we could win.
Oh, exactly. I mean, for example, all right, your average Joe. I got a big, massive air conditioner unit that I use to cool down my house. And I got other things that run, like freezers, refrigerators, and stuff like that. And I get a bill in the mail for, like, let's say $475 with this last bill. All right? That's a lot of money for electricity. Believe it or not, that $400-some-odd could be more well-served to either, buying some extra food for the month, or maybe some fuel for the car, or even helping out somebody with donations to whatever. So I got my electric bill resolved, and I got an extra $400-some-odd a month that's not going out anymore. And even if it's on a smaller scale, such as somebody in an apartment where they only got maybe a $30 or $40 light bill because they're not really running that much, that $30 or $40 extra would lift them a little bit higher out of the poverty level than they already are, because you have to have the electricity in order to be cool or warm in your environment at your home. And the power companies know that, and they ain't got no heart. They might let you slide for a month, maybe 2 months or something like that, but at some point they're going to shut you off.
But the thing is, everything you've mentioned is a heat transference. It's air conditioning. You take heat out of the air in your house and put it outside.
Yeah.
Refrigerator, your freezer, you're taking the heat out of the air inside of those objects and putting it outside. And with the cold steam turbine, you can take that heat and turn it back into energy and put it back into your air conditioner, into your freezer, into your refrigerator.
Yeah, I've always said that if you can solve the heating problem, which takes the most amount of energy to, like, use an electric heater, if you can solve the heating problem, then you got the whole entire energy crisis resolved. Because, like you said, it's the energy exchange, heat and cool. You can get, believe it or not, you can get cool from heat.
Justin said expansion and collapsion.
Yep.
Justin says exactly the same thing you say. He says exactly the same thing I say. He just uses different words.
I think that if we could resolve this issue, such as to build the most efficient heater slash air conditioner, because it's all heat exchange. If we could, if we can solve this one issue and get that out to the general public, we could resolve a whole lot of problems literally overnight. Now, the only problem that we couldn't resolve would be the greed issue, where somebody would try to suppress that as much as humanly possible so that nobody would have it and they would still maintain control as far as power generation goes.
Westinghouse and Tesla. Tesla wanted to give free energy to the world, and Westinghouse backed him. But then all of a sudden he says, wait a minute, if I can't put a meter on it, duh.
Yeah, let me tell you something exciting here. Alright. What do you know about plasma?
I don't know the first thing about plasma. I know the word. I have no idea what it means.
Alright, well, essentially, when you take a high voltage and you energize an inert gas such as argon, it creates enough energy and pressure in there to create plasma. Well, if you've ever put your finger on a plasma globe, those little nifty little lightning things that you buy in the novelty stores or whatever, you'll notice something's going on there. At the tip where your finger's at, there's heat going on there. All right, in the center of that plasma, it is hot. It is too hot to touch. All right, well, if you can get work out of voltage alone, then there's the holy grail of free energy. All right, now if all it takes is high voltage, a high frequency voltage, to literally, and you can do this with a 1.5 volt battery, for produce enough high voltage to energize gas into the plasma state. If you can tap into that heat that's at the heart of that plasma, you've got it resolved right there. Because at the center of that plasma, it is hot. I literally took 20 kilovolts of high voltage, and keep in mind, this is only in the milliamps. So this isn't even enough amperage to literally kill you. It's just super high voltage, 20 kilovolts. I shot it into a vacuum tube full of argon, and that vacuum tube got so incredibly hot that it literally burnt a hole right through a perfect circle about the size of a dime right through the side of that glass tube, and it released enough energy to literally light up every single fluorescent bulb, monitor, and any gas-filled tubes in my lab for 3 solid minutes is how much energy that thing released. I was sold. From that point on, I knew that there was something going on there. And I know you have to try it. Go get you one of those plasma globes and put a piece of aluminum foil on that thing and see that energy doesn't transmit out through that aluminum foil and actually get your finger hot. It'll burn you. There is a lot going on inside that plasma. And that's the expansion that we're talking about. That expansion and collapsation that Justin's talking about. When that energy was released from that tube under that much pressure, could you imagine what it was bouncing off of? You know? Whatever metal's in there, the energy's got to go somewhere. It's being picked up by aluminum that I got in my lab, stainless steel, copper, any kind of iron or whatever, and just bouncing all over that lab, energizing everything for 3 solid minutes. That's a fact.
All right, wait a minute. You're talking about you got my head spinning.
I overpressurized a vacuum tube full of argon and got an energy release that was mind-boggling.
Okay, I'm coming up there.
Imagine if you took a doggone fluorescent bulb and you hooked it to super high voltage. And you know, light is heat and heat is light. When the lumens start raising up inside that voltage, or inside that bulb, then that temperature is raising as well. The brighter that light gets, the hotter that it gets. It'll get to the point where that glass can't withstand that type of temperature. It's either going to A, crack, or it's going to B, melt. And so if I'm seeing a visible light spectrum from the energizing of the argon inside there, which was the brightest, most beautiful purple that you've ever seen in your life, that light spectrum, light is heat and heat is light, vice versa. And different inert gases will produce different different colors in the spectrum. But either way, if I can see it with my eyes, then it's producing heat. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
And so there's where the key lies. If you could solve the heating problem, which is the hardest portion of the whole electric portion, then you can also solve the cooling. Because here's the deal. Let's say you boil water, right? And you send this water goes up into vapors. What happens when the water goes up and hits a lower temperature?
It condenses.
And then falls.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and so as that mist is falling down from the steam that normally rises, there's a happy medium in between there. If you get too close to steam, you can get burnt. But at some point, the steam becomes cool because it's beginning to condense back into water again.
Right.
So, if on one side of this unit you have something that is producing enough heat to literally create the boiling effect of the water, raising the steam up, and then that is going over the top of a condenser that is then, as that moisture is falling down, using the evaporated cooling, now you've got cold air.
Right.
So you pipe the heat to where you want it to heat your water up, and you pipe the cold to where you want to stay cool. It's as simple as that. And if you can do it all with high voltage, then you've got the holy grail of electricity, because it's so super simple to create high voltage.
It really, really, no joke, voltage is simple.
Mm-hmm. Whereas the old conventional current relies on resistance to create the heat, The newer version would be relying on a material such as argon gas to create the heat. So if you got a chamber that has, let's say you got a coil of copper wire that you can circulate water through, and on the outer portion of this coil copper wire you have a vacuum that literally has argon gas filled inside of it, all right? All you have to do is have an anode and a cathode or whatever to send the high voltage in and the other portion to the ground. And you will, when you send that high voltage in there, you will create plasma that will begin to heat up that copper tubing. And then the water that you send through that copper tubing will in turn heat that water. Now, determining on how high that voltage is will determine on how hot that water gets. You could literally create steam inside that copper pipe.
Wait a minute. Literally create steam.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. The steam at 55 degrees is what?
Pressure.
Oh, okay. So if you have a negative pressure, then a lesser negative pressure would be a greater pressure. I mean, did I say something that didn't make sense?
No, it makes perfect sense. It doesn't matter whether you go towards the vacuum side or the pressure side. Either way, you still got energy. And you can use a vacuum to suck a turbine one way or pressure to blow the turbine the opposite way.
All right. Now you're talking. It's where you start. It's the starting point. It's not pressure. It's your starting point. It's either here or there. Now, if you're here and something is over there, then that's a plus. Am I right?
You lost me.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry. I want to use words that people can understand. Now, if I'm sitting here and it's 0 degrees, then something that is 10 degrees is hot.
Yeah.
But something that is minus 10 degrees is cold.
Yeah.
But I'm 0. Now, this is what we call measurement, okay? Where do you start? Now, if we go to absolute 0 pressure, then the boiling point of any liquid is equal. the boiling point. Any heat whatsoever will cause that liquid to boil.
Yep. Now okay. You can make ice in a vacuum.
Yeah, I've done it.
Water will literally boil to the extent that it actually creates ice. And when you talk about boiling water and creating ice, that don't sound right.
No, it doesn't. But the thing is, if you remove the heat from water, it will turn to ice.
Yep.
And a vacuum, what does it do? It reduces the boiling point until there is no heat left. So the ice has no, the water has no, what's the word? No choice. It has no choice. It must turn to a solid. Because water without heat is solid.
Yep.
It's solid. And the solid.
Even in cold water, there's heat.
Yes, there is. As long as there's water, as long as it's a liquid, it contains heat. Remove the heat, and it has no choice. It will turn solid. That's why you can take an ice cube and put it in a bell jar and hook up a vacuum pump, and nothing happens. Because there is no heat in that water.
Well,
you can vacuumize the heck out of it, but you put any liquid, water, in a bell jar, and you hook a vacuum pump to it, it will boil because there's heat, and the vacuum is sucking the heat right out of the water.
Yep. Okay, so, you know, with all that said, since we're talking about some redneck science, because if the mainstream guys were listening to us, they'd probably think we're nuts, but if they do their calculations, they might just find out we're right.
Look here. You've got a bell jar. You have water in the bell jar. And you hook a vacuum pump to it, and you vacuumize it, and all of a sudden, all this heat in the water is going into different molecules in the water, and they're exploding into steam.
Yeah.
So now all of a sudden you need a little bit of heat from what? The outside of your air conditioner. So you put that in there, and this water just keeps boiling because the vacuum is sucking it off, and now all of a sudden this, like you just said, the steam goes up into a condenser. A coil, and that heat is dispersing. So it condenses back to water, drops back into the pipe, to the pile, and it sucks up more heat from what? From your condensing coils outside.
Yep.
I'm trying this over and over again. Use the same energy over again.
Yeah, and when I talk about storage, you know, like I said, like an 800 microfarad capacitor literally blow your thumb right off your hand. Ain't no joke. Yes, you got a lot of storage potential in there. So if you had a large enough storage bank and you used something as simple as a coffee pot element to circulate that water, it may take you a long time to get that up to operating temperature. But once it does, it doesn't take much to keep maintaining that same temperature. And so you could use a radiant energy, a radiant heater, kind of like the old radiators that you seen back in the old days, and all you got to maintain is that coffee pot element. You just keep that going to keep the water hot. That's what I talked about with that redneck hot tub. I mean, there's quite a few gallons of water in that tub, but yet it was able to be maintained, and it would get so incredibly hot that you couldn't sit inside of it. And that was just 110 volts AC doing the work. It took, like I said, it took longer to heat up that pool, but once it did get up to it didn't take nothing to maintain it.
Right.
Anyway, let's take a quick music break. I'll throw on a redneck tune in honor of the redneck mad science that's going on the Knights of the Round Table right at the moment. So, with that said, everybody, stay tuned. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table. Peace and love, everybody.
Turn it sunsets. They travel to the world on a silvery light. The people of the earth stood waiting, watching as the ships came one by one. Setting fire to the sky as they landed, carrying to the world children of the sun. Children of the sun. All at once came a sound from inside. The beam of light hit the ground.
Turbo and the Knights of the Round Table.
everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table, and we are back. So there's been a couple of questions posed in the chat room, and we've had some pretty good discussions off air as well. And so pretty much just like every other Mad Science show, this Knights of the Round Table, they all seem to take a life of their own, because when you put brilliant minds together, and if you can keep them from choking each other out for the lack of high-tech terminology or the too much of it, whatever, then you'll get somewhere. Either way, first address one that's in the chat room. Do2 said in the chat room over at ShazizRadio.com, superchat.html. And if you're out there listening, go over and check out the chat room over at ShazizRadio if you got something you want to throw in there and get involved. Anyway, he said that if the aluminum foil heats up when it's on the plasma, could you hook a little DC fan to it to let the heat blow around? Essentially, yeah, you can, but at the level of heat that it is at that point, it wouldn't be enough to really. It would definitely change some temperature in that general vicinity. But what I'm suggesting is, instead of having it on the outside of that plasma, that you have the plasma surrounding it so that you're getting the full potential of that heat. And just the aluminum foil by itself isn't going to retain as much heat as, say, like if you had like a pellet that had oil inside of it. That heat transfer to that oil, and that oil would basically hold that heat longer, if you understand what I'm saying. You guys know where I'm at here?
Yes, I do.
So If somebody out there could build a reactor that had a vacuum chamber, with inside that vacuum chamber either had some sort of core, like a radiator, a heater core, and you had the lines where you could circulate the water in and out of that, and then the argon gas inside there where you could energize this argon gas with high voltage, you could transfer that heat into that core, which would heat up whatever water or oil was coming in through the other direction. There's where you get a lot more heat out for, you know, what we're talking about here. But because the aluminum foil on that, like say on the outside of the plasma globe, it will get hot. You put your finger on there, you know, not only will you get shocked, but the you can actually feel and you can smell it burning. So there's definitely something going on there. So, you guys got any thoughts on that?
You just said everything.
Yeah, pretty much all that low-tech terminology, Justin. Anyway, you guys off the air was talking about expansion and collapsing of a field. And the other day I was watching a video that Terry Woodruff was doing. And he was pumping a Slayer exciter at over 100 volts of electricity. Now, the frequency range at which this is occurring, you gotta remember, you know, the higher that the more energy you put in, the faster that switch is going to work. I mean, that's all there is to it. You know, it's like turning the volume up and down. So that frequency is getting faster and faster and faster the more energy you put to it. Well, at some point, when that field first expands, goes out, it's going to collapse. Well, the next signal's coming out. It's going to collapse. Well, at that rate, at some point, I'm visualizing this in my head while I'm watching this video. It is literally creating a vacuum which is drawing energy back into the system. And so they're trying to extend the range of the wireless transmission by sending the energy wave out, but the energy wave can only go so far because as it's going out, it's being sucked back in by that massive speed of the collapsation of that field. Does that make sense to you guys?
Yes, it does. It really does.
So they are getting wireless energy transmission, but they've got it at such a range that it's actually drawing the energy back towards it.
Uh-huh.
And so even though they can still light up a light bulb across the room, they're not sending it out as far as, say, like your regular, just a AM or FM radio. You know, you'll send it out, just a little regular walkie-talkie can go a quarter mile. They got about a quarter mile range. A CB radio might have a 5 mile range. but that frequency that it's sending out isn't moving so rapidly that it's collapsing in on itself. What it's doing is it's sending a wave out, which the next wave comes out, bumps the one. It's kind of like a traffic jam, you know, when the one behind it hits it and boosts it over even further. You see where I'm coming from?
Yes, I do. Eliminate the cost.
Yeah, well, that's another key point in the whole deal. You don't have to have coils to make wireless energy. You could use just metal plates. You know, anything that'll work one direction will work in the opposite direction, such as radiant energy. If you can pick up radiant energy with a sheet of metal, then you can also obviously send out radiant energy with a sheet of metal by putting the energy in one direction at a higher pressure than what it's in its natural state. Then you are creating a field around that that basically will radiate out.
Wait a minute. Now we're talking.
There's a video out there of an AC motor that was done with an aluminum beer can. And unlike your conventional rotor, which has some copper wire windings around it, it is just nothing more than a aluminum beer can. And the magnetic field on one side and then a magnetic field on the other side pulsing was enough to literally turn that beer can just like an electric motor. Now, does it have as much torque as your standard electric motor? No, because you have two opposing fields that are fighting with each other. That's why you get such an amount of torque out of the way that the system's designed now. But that's not to say that it couldn't be expanded on with more coils and a rotor designed specifically to make and break the field as it travels around in circles. What do you think?
I think you're right.
So,
I'm sorry,
you could build an electric motor that wouldn't require any copper wire whatsoever. It would be an aluminum plate on one side, aluminum plate on the other side, maybe broken up into, you know, sections. And then on the rotor itself, it may be like a cog-shaped rotor that has spots that are ground down in there, where the space is in between each one of the pieces of aluminum. And so you put the voltage to those other plates and alternating the field from one to the next, and then you would
To alternate the field from one to the next, you need the Hedvig scalings PMH, because that's what it is. It's an electrical, per se, breathing heart.
So essentially what you're saying, it's already been done, but just on a different...
Yes, if you look up a mechanical earth battery clock, that's what's going on. They put the two plates in the ground, and you got a PMH, and it bounces the same frequency back and forth, and it turns the clock at 60 seconds, at 60 minutes, and 1 hour, and 2 hours, and yeah.
Well, there you go, man.
Yep.
Stan Lee said he learned a word today. He learned a new word today. Can you pronounce that? Miscreants? What is that? MISCREANTS. You're gonna have to define it for us.
Justin, come on, Justin. What this forgets? Define it where we can understand.
He's the one that said he learned a new word. He should have gave us the definition for it.
Okay, you give the definition. Come on, you.
Never heard it.
Oh, we slumped him on a high-tech terminology, did we? Uh-huh. Okay, yeah, that's all right. He's speaking a different... It's probably French.
A criminal, as they would say in our institutions. The definition they give you is a person who behaves badly or in a way that breaks the law. So, we would say a criminal.
Okay, so if I break the law, I'm a criminal. But if I don't agree with the law, then what do? I need to change it.
Who defines the law? Who has the authority to believe in that their belief is right?
Yeah, who says that the laws of physics are written in stone?
Right, exactly.
That's why I don't say they're wrong. I say they're controlled and steered, feared.
Well, when you go to college and the professor tells you that the laws of physics are written in stone, that energy cannot be created nor destroyed, and you say otherwise, then you're going to have to deal with the wrath, man.
You go against the law, you're a criminal.
Yeah, you're a criminal. I'm a criminal against the laws of physics. I'm probably a wanted man in the physics world.
Miscreant. How much is the reward on your head, Shazam?
I don't know, man. Ask NASA groupies, because I'm sure they want to do me in. At the very least, I'm sure they want to try to beat me up.
Right. I mean, you know, they don't want to beat you up. Just give me a black eye, okay?
A miscreant is a person who is bad, who lies, breaks the laws, yells at small puppies, is somewhat old-fashioned word popular with old ladies shocked at having their purses stolen at the opera. Now, who would steal an old lady's purse? That's rude.
Exactly.
I wouldn't even touch a lady's purse. Ladies can get violent, man.
Hey, wait a minute. Okay, do you realize, have you ever been out in the country and looked at an old house? I mean, you know, people build houses and they put eaves. I mean, this is where the roof extends further than the outside walls of the house.
Yeah.
But if you go out in the country and you'll see older houses, really old houses, that no two sides of the house have same dimensions of eve. Why?
Because they probably didn't have a tape measure back then. Yeah, chalk line.
No, they did. And the thing is, they paid attention to the sun.
Steve asked you a question about the law. He said, ask Raymond if it's the law or an opinion.
Okay, wait a minute. I'm going to go somewhere, okay? All right. Pay attention. Now, on an older house, no two sides have the same length of eaves because they did have tape measures and they did pay attention to the sun. So, now we're getting somewhere, okay? I'm trying to talk English here. In the winter, the sun is really low. So, what do you want? It's winter, it's cold. You want the sun to come into the house. In the summer, the sun is really high. So, now all of a sudden, you want the eaves to come out and shade that side of the house. Okay?
That's brilliant.
I want to say a word that's nasty, but...
Don't do it.
No, it smells bad. Okay?
Yeah.
Old smell bads. Look, knew what they were doing. They didn't have air conditioning, so they had to use their head. They made windows that were sashes. Sash windows. Okay?
Yeah.
There were two-part windows. Now, you could take the top part and pull it down, which opened the top and let the hot air out. And you can raise the lower part and let the cool air in. So you raise the window on the shady side of the house, let the cool air out. You lowered the window, the sash, the two-part window, on the hot side of the house and let the hot air out. But at the same time, the eave of the house extended farther so that the sun could not heat up the house. I mean, come on.
That's brilliant.
Our ancestors were not stupid.
Yeah, and I got to say, Stephen Gibbons bursted my bubble just now.
Okay.
Well, remember I said the laws of physics aren't written in stone. He sends a picture in there. He says, apparently the laws of physics are written in stone. There's a picture of some squiggly lines. It's somebody engraved into a rock.
How you doing, guys? Justin, Raymond, Jesus.
Am I the only one that found that funny? You sound good there, Steve. Am I the only one that found that funny?
No, I did.
Doggone it, Steve.
What is quite amusing to this is it's all just someone's opinion.
Yeah?
It doesn't matter if it's written in stone, written on paper, or engraved on someone's forehead. It's still the opinion of a man, a man infallible.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah. I can't say the entire phrase, but somebody once said that opinions are like, you know what, and they all stink.
Right. Steve, okay. Now, my opinion is I'm watching a movie, and the movie is showing some guy walking behind a mule, and he's hanging on to the handle of a plow, and he's fighting really hard. And, I mean, my God, he's working his butt off, and this is a movie, and I'm not stupid. It's like, it's, duh. Wait a minute. When I was a young man, I knew it could not be that hard. So what did I do? I got my truck, I drove down a country road, and I found a porch with three old codgers sitting on the porch, chewing tobacco, drinking iced tea. And I said, hey, wait a minute, I want to learn how to do this. I know it cannot be that hard. It is impossible. It is impossible for a man to work that hard to plow 20 acres of ground. He couldn't do it. It's stupid. It's dumb. It doesn't exist, but it is exciting in the movie. How do I do this? I want to learn from you older guys. What do we do? And they said, well, number one, you need to adjust the supple back. And number two, there's a cleavage on the front of the plow. If you get the angle of the angle right, then you can do what you want to do. And so all of a sudden, now I'm walking down my field, plowing my ground, preparing my garden. I've got a plow in one hand, a cup of coffee in the other, and me and my horse are one.
So you work smarter, not harder.
Exactly. You don't need to work hard. You just need to learn from the older guys. I mean, it's not that hard. It's just, I mean, it's just joy. I enjoyed my time with my horse.
Well, you're always saying on here that if you ignore history, that you're doomed to repeat it. Now, there's a lot of history out there that I'd like to repeat, you know, such as some of the experiments that Tesla was doing and Edison and Marconi and all them. I'd love to be able to see inside of all their labs. Could you imagine with those brilliant minds here today that didn't have the drawback of mainstream science that figures they know it all already and they're not willing to bend or even think remotely outside the box what could be accomplished with those kind of minds?
You've got...
Maybe we are the modern day Tesla and Edison and Marconi.
Okay, you got it. You finally got it. There are people in history that knew what the hell they were doing. They knew what they were doing. When they build a house, on the south side is longer.
There's a castle up in Sedalia, Missouri. I can't remember the Boswell Castle, I believe is what it's called. And it was made back in either the late 1800s or the early 1900s. And it was really brilliant how they did this deal. It's setting up on top of a hill, which underneath the house is, which is a mansion essentially. There is a cave underneath that house. And as the wind is blowing through that hill and up through that cave, it's pushing that cool air up through a chamber that goes all the way up to the attic of that house and then falls back down through vents throughout the entire house. So essentially what he's got going on there is free electricity or free air conditioning. And when he during the wintertime, when he obviously doesn't want the cold air coming in, guess what he does? He shuts the trap door.
I mean, come on. Old people stupid.
Hey, necessity's the mother of invention. He figured out a way to cool that entire building before air conditioner was, you know, even in mainstream.
The problem is, nobody set him down and asked him, what's going on? But I asked, what's going on? I mean, you know, movies are something, a way to make money, okay? So they want to do the exciting thing and this, that, and another. This man is pulling this plow and he's really straining hard because this mule is pulling his plow through the ground. And I'm thinking, that's not cutting it.
Frank, was the mule called number 7?
Yeah.
Yeah, too bad it wasn't Francis the Mule, because then you could have a good conversation with the mule while you're plowing the field.
Hey, wait a minute.
About the laws of physics.
You guys don't get it. I didn't use a mule. I used a Tennessee walking horse. Okay? He was a Tennessee walker. And he wasn't a mule, but he could pull a 6-inch plow. But the thing is, he was really, really smart. Because this horse could actually talk to me. And his name was Fuller because, we called him Fuller because when he was riding him, you never knew when he was going to stumble and fall. But he was smart. He could talk. This mule could actually talk. And I would say, Fuller, we did a good job today. Would you like a few oats? And he'd say, a few.
You know, Raymond, I call most politicians Fuller. Because they're Fuller.
Yep.
Well, anyway, this whole conversation led all the way back to the whole CERN Hadron Collider and the effects that could potentially be or not be and that kind of stuff, which basically went on into some radioactive waste and energy and the collapsation and expansion of all the fields out there. And so, you know, even though this is the Knights of the Round Table, we're still talking mad science on her, because as far as I'm concerned, it's all related to society and making the world a better place. If you can learn how to work in harmony with nature, the wind's blowing somewhere on this planet, all right?
Yep.
You tap in there. The heat is somewhere on this planet. You tap in there as well. There's static electricity via lightning going on somewhere all day long, every day, for the entire year on this planet. So you tap in there as well. And you feed that energy into a new style of power grid. Maybe even change the frequency of it so you can send it out farther, such as the average DC current. I think 12 miles was the max that they said that DC current could go. But AC, because of the way that it functions, could go even farther. And if you raise the frequency of it, you could send it yet even farther. And you could build systems down that line that would amplify that energy and send it yet even farther. And then when that radiated energy hit the transformer and started energizing that transformer, now you had a lot of voltage that you had to step back down. So what they do, they put some resistance in between it and then turn around and drop it back down to a usable current for your house. All right.
Okay.
So what's stopping us from tapping into everything that nature does without, having to dig up the ground and pull coal or oil or anything like that out of there? I mean, thermoelectrics, for example. I mean, how many thermal vents are around? How many hot water springs are around? What materials could you put in water that would not pollute the water, such as like maybe you put copper in there and it got too hot, you could get copper oxide or something like that that would poison the water. So we obviously don't want to do that. But what if you encase that same copper in a thick layer of glass where the glass would literally transmit the heat to the copper and still be able to tap into that energy? You see...
Should this?
Yeah.
You can't put a meter on.
Well, you know what? The guy that said you can't put a meter on, now his descendants might be around, but he's not around anymore. I don't care what he says.
I'm on my soapbox. Okay.
Yeah.
My soapbox is you can't put a meter on. If you can't put a meter on, then, who's going to spend their money to build?
You know what I'm willing to bet? And I hadn't even looked at it. I'm just kind of shooting off the side of the hip here, right out of the box. I'm willing to bet that if you went over to Hawaii, they probably got the lava flows out there as a protected resource. Because somebody out there would have said, hey, you know, look at all that heat over there. I could do some steam generation with that. And so as opposed to allowing them to do that and reduce carbon footprint for everybody else, they would put some sort of regulation out there that says you can't put no thermal electric generator on that heat.
Right. 100%, because you cannot put a meter on it.
Yeah.
It's free. And if you cannot put a meter on it, then somebody with money is going to make sure that you don't use it.
That's right. They'll get lobbied to, hey, that's a natural resource. We got to preserve that beauty for the future of all humanity. Never mind the fact that that beauty is going to change continuously because it's hot molten lava. You know, it's going to continue to change. It's never going to stay the same. And years later, if you get tired of looking at it, you just remove your device and you got the lava flow again. So it's not going to hurt anything.
So wait a minute. So now, all of a sudden, we can't put a meter on it, but we can build a tourist boat and people pay.
Oh, yeah. People will pay to look at it.
And see this lava flow. And they don't realize that, there's a lot of energy here. This is really...
Excuse me. My coffee went down the wrong place.
Going to Alaska and watching whales reach the water. That's a lot of energy there. Why do they breach? They're hungry. There's a lot of fish down there. And if they take that super tons of muscle and power and jump into the air and slam down into the water, they're going to compress the water. Hey, water is a liquid. You can't compress a liquid. So all of a sudden, all this pressure, it does compress the fish, and they're stunned, and the whale can eat it. So this lava flow is putting out a lot of heat, but nobody has figured out how to put a meter on it, but they have figured out how to build tourist ships. Am I
ramping? No, I understand what you're saying, but it's just another little example of the same thing that we've been trying to tell everybody forever and a day. You know, when I talk about free energy, people look at me cross-eyed. Oh, there ain't no such thing as free energy.
Right. No joke.
But the lava flow is still going, right? It hasn't stopped.
There's no such thing as energy that is not free.
Uranium's still deteriorating, releasing energy. It hasn't stopped. The sun's still producing all kinds of energy. Hasn't stopped. The wind's still blowing. Hasn't stopped. The ocean waves are still going. Hasn't stopped. And you want to talk about perpetual motion? Tell me how it is that the Earth is still rolling. You know, everything's still shaking up. Everything's still moving around. You've got... typhoons and hurricanes and tornadoes and earthquakes and all kinds of things. There's so much energy going on around here that nature shakes it loose every once in a while.
Well, you want to talk about perpetual motion, let's think about the perpetual motion between politicians and a nice directorship in a large corporation.
Well, yeah,
it's like a revolving door.
If you took...
They go in one seat and into the other. It's like musical chairs.
If you don't get elected, then you get to lobby. If you took and hooked a thermocouple near a politician's mouth with some magnets to his lips and some coils strapped from his nose, you'd have a 1,000-watt generator right there, man.
You're right.
It's all out there doing your jaw jacking, blowing hot air, so...
I've got a better one than that, Shaviz. If you dug up the founding fathers and put a neodymium magnet at each end of their coffin, they'd be spinning so fast we'd solve the energy problem.
Oh, I agree. They got to be rolling over in their grave.
In every country, not just America.
Yep. They got to be rolling over. They can't believe the stupidity that's going on, you know?
Well, you guys are starting to get somewhere that I don't want to go, but I'm going to go there anyway. All these brilliant, beautiful, unbelievably genuine minds sending probes into outer space to contact superior beings. Think about this a minute. In the history of mankind on this earth, not one time has any superior race ever invaded another country that they did not take them over, extinguish them, or turn them into slaves.
And well, all you got to do for an example of what you're saying is go watch the movie Mars Attacks. First off, they got a translator, and the translator is supposed to translate Martian to English, and they come out there and say, ack, which loosely translated means we come in peace right before they start shooting.
Yeah. When you like Star Trek, we come in peace, shoot to kill.
Yeah.
Don't wear a red jumper, because you're going to end up dead by the end of the episode.
The program many years ago, back before there was color television, it was all black and white, and another race from another universe, another solar system, came here, and they wanted to infiltrate our society. And people said, well, duh, and they kept giving us all kinds of knowledge and this, that, and another, and they had a book. The book was translated, okay, the title of the book was translated, To Serve Man. That was the title of the book, translated into English, To Serve Man. So this scientist says, duh, these people are good. They want to serve man. So he gets on the spaceship and heads back to their planet, and all of a sudden, he breaks the genuine code of the book.
Yes, cookbook.
Yeah, well, Raymond, Hannibal Lecter wanted to serve man with a nice side of fava beans.
To serve man, it was a cookbook.
Yeah, well, Hannibal Lecter had a cookbook as well, and he was quite happy to serve man.
Yeah, that's disgusting, man.
Hey, come on, no, wait a minute. It's not disgusting. It is exactly what we as human beings are trying to do. We're trying to contact other people superior to us.
Well, I understand that and the dangers there that lie in, but I'm saying to serve man and to eat man, that's disgusting, man. I ain't eating people.
Well, it may
even
be
in the worst case scenario.
True. I mean, what's to say that an intelligent race from a different planet is of a intellectual level so far beyond us, they see us as we see cattle.
Why?
Yeah.
They see just protein.
But then again, they probably wouldn't eat us as nutrition because we're a bit like genetically modified foods. They don't really want to mess with it.
Well, I kind of see it more like they would see us as monkeys, you know, like if you go out there and you're looking at the wildlife out there when you got like a, let's say, a herd of chimpanzees or orangutans, you know, they got a little structure going on. They got somebody who's in charge and they got a little bit of feuding and fussing going on, but it's not something that you'd waste your time sitting there trying to have an intellectual conversation with them because they're either going to rip you apart or beat you up or something.
You do realize that monkey brains is a delicacy in Shanghai.
That's disgusting.
Wait a minute. All right. Now, all of a sudden, English people come to the United States and they come on the East Coast. Alright? So Leif Erikson came here and he discussed, he wrote and talked about all the grapevines and hey, he was a Viking. Ooh. But then Christopher Columbus came here and he says, dang on, we did this, we did that. And all of a sudden the English says, whoa, our prisons are full. So, we're going to send them over there take all these dialects, these derelicts, and the whores, the prostitutes, the pilferers, the whatever, and we're going to empty our prisons, and we're going to send all these criminals over there, and they're going to survive, or they're going to die.
I have to correct you there, Raymond. We sent all the religious nutters from England to America, and we sent all the criminals to Australia.
Oh, you're right.
All right, so, you know...
And then the French.
What has history taught us then, with all this said, you know, in the alternative energy world, it taught us that a lot of stuff gets suppressed. And in the want to get rid of your bad guys world, or your nutters, as Steve said, then you send them to a foreign land. Once they get there, whatever they do, they do. And so here we are. We're all here. We're all now. And we got a bunch of nutcases running the doggone governments and the science communities of the world. And we're all wanting to make the world a better place, so we need the solution in order to do so. I'm saying the solution's been right before our very eyes all along. I mean, everything that this earth does, I mean, it's a massive thermoelectric generator of epic proportions. There's so much motion going on and so much power and resource available that if it was used properly and in harmony with nature, we wouldn't be having all these talks about big black oil spills in the oceans and toxic crud coming down from mines polluting the rivers and such. We wouldn't have fish floating belly up or birds flopping dead out of the sky and such. So what kind of solutions do you think that we could get to bring this knowledge to people's head so that they can understand what it is we're talking about? I mean, everybody's like, save the planet, but yet nobody's trying to save the planet. They're all out there with their wooden sign and their paper sign picketing save the trees.
Alright, well, so this, if you want to save the planet, you round up all the inbred people that were into the whole eugenics policy in the 1800s, and you stick them in a plastic bag and you throw them off the rip, off the bridge into a river like you do a bag of puppies that are inbred.
I wouldn't do that. That's rude. I'm saying, put them on a rocket ship and have NASA elite. Ship them over to Mars. They could be the first settlers on Mars.
There you go.
No. What's Mars done to deserve that? Let's just get rid of these inbred lunatics that have genetic mental issues. I mean, as I said the other day, there's certain ancient cultures that feel that if you need more than you require to live a comfortable and happy life, it's a sign of mental illness. So every billionaire on the planet, we round them up, we stick them in a big plastic bag, and we throw them in the Potomac.
Man, that's harsh.
Seriously, people are destroying our planet because they think they are superior to us.
They are, so, like the tribes used to do when somebody got out of hand and did something bad, they'd banish them. We'd banish them to the moon, man. Now, you guys go out there to live on the moon until you get your act together or something.
Do something about it. I mean, it's about time we said, well, okay, you people seem to think that you've got all the answers, but your solution seems to be mass death.
Well, the EPA... Just the EPA alone, this latest story that came out where the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, dumps doggone crud all up into the river over in Denver. Now, Colorado. And so they polluted this doggone river with millions of tons, millions of gallons of crud that, you know, how's the fish going to survive? And you know what their answer was? They said, well, don't drink no water until this crud goes floating by.
Well, basically in Denver, you've got the legalization of cannabis. So basically what they're saying is if you want to grow weed, you have to collect rainwater because you're not taking it out of the river.
Yeah, well, they said the river quality already was such that the fish didn't live in it. So why would you even want to be in that river if it's that nasty? So
a little bear of cork. When they started stopping pumping sewage straight into the River Lee in Cork City, said in 7 years' time, you can swim in this river. And somebody said, well, you're not going to be mayor in 7 years' time, so I tell you what,
You jump in first and I'll jump in after you.
Well, there you go.
A certain amount of common sense involved in this.
The EPA...
There are people in this world that say things that they will never do.
The EPA is a government agency that is supposed to be out there to protect the environment. And look what they did.
Protect it for who?
I don't know, for the slugs that come after man. I mean, because when it's all said and done, what's actually going to live on this planet whenever they get to the polluting the environment in every direction that we got? I mean, maybe the roaches will be all right.
The roaches and the rats will survive.
Yeah.
We won't.
The roaches will be sitting around free basing nuclear waste, and the rats will be glowing in the dark.
Well, that's just unfair, Shaziz, you know. I mean, rats, they've a value in society that people underestimate.
Well, right. They're destructive, I'll tell you that.
Steve.
Yes, mate.
How many rats have you ever eaten?
Well, I was in Thailand for about 3 months, so probably quite a few.
Good.
But not intentionally.
But you did eat them.
Well, you know, I mean, it's protein.
Okay.
Well, I'll tell you what, one time I was sitting down at my aunt's house and we were talking about, I seen some movie and this guy was picking up roadkill off the side of the road. And I'm like, man, you ain't going to catch me dead eating that. And my aunt said, she looked at me all seriously, says, you'd be surprised what you've ate around here. She talked about squirrel, rabbit, raccoon, and possum.
Good eating in an armadillo.
There is something to be said about the lack of knowledge sometimes.
Yes. I used to raise rabbits, and rabbits are rodents, and we ate a lot of rabbits, but they're rodents with long ears and short fluffy tails. But I raised them in a cage for food for my family. Come on, a rat? Come on, give me a break. It's a rodent.
Alright, well, whatever. I'm not eating rats unless it's the apocalypse and that's all I got. And then he's going to have to be well-cooked and barbecued and something. Well, since Steve is a chef, we need to bring him over here. That way, during the apocalypse, he can make the rats palatable.
No shit.
Well, Ratto van, preferably a rat that's run over by a van. Ratto, when you say O-van, it usually means with red wine. It doesn't mean to say that you've actually run something over.
Steve.
Yes, mate.
I like the way you think.
Well, you are in a minority, my friend.
Give me a break.
Hey, if there isn't no free, I'll tell you what, this is a free energy device. Okay. If you can hook a system up to capture the energy from the ruckus that Steve creates when he talks to government officials or anybody from the city and tap into that energy, you got one heck of a generator right there, man.
No joke. No joke.
Even if it's negative energy coming off of them, you have to capture it.
Expansion, collapse.
Yep, same thing.
Steve, you are one humble man.
I'm as full as they come with it. I'm proud.
Alright, so, you know, like I said, we all started off talking about the CERN project out there using 13 teraelectric volts to basically energize a collider that they're slamming particles into each other And I'm saying that it's worth some definite serious research into what the side effects of this deal would be going on, whether or not it is interacting with the Earth, and in what capacity it would be interacting with the Earth, which in turn would interact with the bodies such as the Sun and the Moon and such. So that's mad science on their side of it. And Stephen also put a link in there a little while back about some NASA scientists being killed. Does anybody know anything about that?
I don't.
You can trust your government, Shaziz. You know that.
Oh, yeah. You can always trust your government. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. Yeah.
I want to hear about 20,000... volts, 20
k volts. Well, the like I said, the Beckett oil burner igniter, they cost about $85 a piece to buy one brand new. 12 volt to 20 kilovolt is the range on there. The mill amperage, I can't remember what the exact mill amperage is, but it's not very much. Run off a 12 volt battery, you can literally energize gas inside of tubes for as long as you can stretch them. All it is a frequency wave being sent out, you know. By sending that energy from the oil burner igniter through the gas and then connected into the earth on the other side, you've got your lighting source solved out there. And I believe that if you took that same energy and built a reactor that would have, like I said, the copper tubing coils or even a heater core inside of it, and then it was surrounded by argon gas inside a vacuum, that you could literally energize that plasma in there to transfer the heat from the plasma into the core, which whatever water or oil you circulated through that on the other side would bring the heat. And so with that said, now you would have your heating and your lighting resolved, because at the same time while you're using that energy to energize the plasma inside the heater your system, you would also be energizing the gas inside the fluorescent bulbs and LED technology as well. LEDs will light up wirelessly with all you got to do is hold one leg of the LED up in the air near that radiant energy and it'll light up. You can actually use that LED to charge up a capacitor wirelessly using that same energy force. So the potentials are limitless. It just depends on how far you want to take it. If we had the right crew together with a machine shop, a few basic materials, a tank of argon, which you can get in any welding shop, and could build somebody who could blow glass and get a chamber built, or even construct a fish tank style chamber with some heavy, I'd say use tempered glass so that if there was an explosion you wouldn't have shards in your face, you'd just break down into little tiny pieces, and it would also be thicker. But we could build a chamber that would hold the core that would be used to transfer the heat from the plasma into the water or whatever. And that same instance, if you're able to transmit that heat from the plasma to the core, you can tap on along the way some Peltier devices or thermal couples or thermal piles, and even drag off some extra energy that way as well. So all you're doing is using what would have normally been waste energy anyway, and you're using it and reusing it all in the same sense. If you want wireless transmission as well, I mean, there you go. It's all there in the same deal, and I believe it can be done with a 12-volt car battery, with a 12-volt Beckett oil burner igniter. And so, all together, this entire project, just materials alone, I'm saying you're at the... I'm just going to stretch it high. At $500, you could build a device such as that. And the rest of it would be whatever it costs you for the machining of the device itself. So, what do you think?
I think you're correct. I think
You're 117.5% correct.
I try to think as little as possible.
That's dangerous.
Well, but at 12 volts, and the reason why I'm always talking about 12 volts and below is because we all know already we can get 12 volts. We can get 12 volts by making a chemical battery. That's easy. That range right there is obtainable by anybody.
Right?
Solar panel, a couple batteries, you got 12 volts. Throw more batteries in there, you got a larger bank, you can store more of the energy. And so if we can start off from a 12-volt system and energize gas into the plasma state and create enough heat to literally transfer that heat to any other liquid or whatever, and then use that heat transfer to not only do heating, cooling, generation of electricity, it's no different than the thermoelectric generator that they used to supposedly go to Pluto with the probe down there. All it is the difference in the material. It's how you get the energy that is the difference. It's as simple as that.
That's simple. Yes, it is truly that simple.
And there's enough heat out there. The sun alone, Fresnel lenses magnify the intensity of that heat. You can make a thermal generator off the sun. You can make a thermal generator off of all these volcanic vents that's all over the place. The water pools, the heated pools or whatever, you know. So the potential's there. And instead of, you know, you got a solar panel outside that is basically producing energy, but at some point it gets so hot that it becomes inefficient. And if you can take away that heat off the back of that solar panel, you would bring that efficiency level back up again. So why aren't we using what would normally be that destructive force, such as the waste energy that is dragging away that energy away from what it is that you want?
You just can't charge people for it.
Well, I don't care about charging people for it. I'm saying the only way we're going to get this is to do it.
You don't have a 50,000 square foot mansion to support and a rather large extended family.
No, but I do got a pretty high electric bill that I sure would like to get rid of.
Yeah, but you know, you didn't inbreed with your cousins for the last 300 or 400 years,
and I don't intend on it either.
Do you get my point? This is where it comes from. You've got these vested interests that have basically, I mean, even the royal family in England, if you want to go back to the original start of royalty, it's because they were the violent psychopathic lunatics that took everything off everybody else, and anybody that had to say anything about it got a sword in the face.
Well, now that we know that, now that we know that, we need to work around them, such as not supporting their system. And if everybody out there who's listening in and believes in what it is we're talking about, if you want to build a doggone free energy device, support the guys and the gals out there doing the research and look up the old research.
Even if you
know?
Want to build it, if you want access to it.
Yeah. You know, I keep saying this. If we could get the right crew in the right place, it wouldn't take 30 days to actually build something. Now, I'm saying we could actually probably do it in a couple of days. But for, since Murphy's Law usually kicks in, and whatever can go wrong usually does go wrong, then we give us some extra leeway. But I feel like if we could get the right individuals in the right lab at the right time and build what it is that we're talking about, that it'd be a done deal. Now, if we get them same individuals to agree that once we get this accomplished, that we just hand it directly over to everybody and his brother via PDF form or whatever kind of way that we can deliver it to them, so that everybody has the knowledge in hand and nobody can sell it, then that's the way.
Well, Shazis, what would you rather do? Would you like to live in a gated compound with a big fence around it and armed guards to keep you safe? Or help your neighbour out so he has nothing and no interest of trying to take something from you that he doesn't have?
Yeah, there you go.
What is going to provide a stability on the planet when everybody has what they need,
and then we take care of the people that, you know, are trying to take more than they need.
Yeah, there's no seat, no reason to fight over what's about it.
I mean, they talk about political correctness, they talk about racism, they talk about this gender equality. How about quality of life equality?
Yeah.
Why do you need 10 billion when you've got millions that can barely feed themselves? They've got no access to clean running water. They've got no access to safe and healthy food. Why do you need 10 billion?
Yep.
That's a mental illness in our society that needs to be.
Really good question. And my solution to that is the average Joe, we get together and we just do this thing because it's not going to get done any other ways. So you're not going to get any corporation to give up on their power sources. And you need to protect the ones out there with the ideas. You need to support the ones out there with the ideas. And you need to spread those ideas to everybody else and his brother, because there's 8 billion people on this planet. And majority of the ones out there fighting are fighting over what? Because somebody else got something that they want. If everybody's got what they want and what they need, then we ain't got no reason to be feuding, do we?
No.
Oh, there's always a reason to feud.
Well, yeah, okay. That's all right. If somebody has a bigger piece of cake than me, that's fine. As long as I got a piece, I'm all right. I'm not greedy.
I'm not greedy. That's the problem. With the world, it's the greedy people, the people that want more than they have.
Well, that's because people have put values on things that are inanimate, and the true value is the actual gold that is the person themselves, you know, that what we could accomplish together if we had not this problem of the greed and lack of common sense. We could go a long ways.
Yep.
And here it is, the year 2015. We should be a lot further along than what we are.
Don't you be telling me that hippy-trippy stuff, mate. I mean, our society is basically designed to predicate on the weak. You know, if you're not taking something off of somebody that they can't really afford to share, then, you know, I mean, I'm not too keen on that idea.
Well, even the big bully on the block can't stand up to all the little weaklings that gather together in masses to jump on that big bully. He got his work cut out for him. He may get some licks in, but he ain't taking down all of them.
Probably he can't, because they will not stand together.
Well, until they do, then we got the system that we got. That's it. That's plain and simple. Until that we stand up against the beast, then that beast system is literally going to allow people in this world to starve. It's going to literally allow wars to continue. It's going to allow improper drugs and medication to hit the markets, and it's going to allow for all the lawsuits. It's going to allow for all the paying of the high bills and the rising fuel and food prices. It's going to allow that system of the beast to continue to beat you down and enslave you to the extent that you're questioning whether or not you're even human or whether life's even worthy.
Now, you just said everything the Knights of the Round Table stand for.
Yep, justice, man.
It's the little people. There is no reason whatsoever for evil to persist, except that good men do not stand up.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table, and good men are standing up. Why don't you join us? You can join us in the chat room over at ShazizRadio.com or over at WakeRadio.com or People to People Radio or all the different networks. There's plenty of links around here, and if you need more links to more networks out there trying to do the same exact thing, then contact us. We don't have no problem with you going listening to somebody else, as long as you're getting the knowledge that you need to take yourself and your family to safety and out of bondage from the beast system that is eating us all alive. You've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table. Peace and love, everybody. Stay tuned.
Yeah, sure is.
You just did. With so much chastise you for. But you stood up.
Yep.
Old? Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice.
And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would... Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What? I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot!
Red knights of the round table, green knights whenever we're able. We'll routine to call the scene to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. Red knights of the round table, our shows are more mid-table. The many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're rock and mad in Camelot, we sing from the dire Camelot. No, we're tough and able, quite indefatigable.
I have to push the pram along.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
Terrible. Always working to fill the table and the knights of the round table.